I would go in and try to rouse her. She would pull the covers over her head and growl at me. Almost every morning. Always the same thing.
The beast flails, but the man is still in control. Other guard have joined in. Every one of them using a power on the mammoth beast, fire and lightning raining down upon it, streaks of lasers coming from all directions. Some guard are doing damage unseen, standing away from it and holding their hands out in concentration. And then, high up, a collective storm brews. One major cloud growing and glowing in an otherwise cloudless sky, some sort of energy collecting within it. All guard are in on it, all of them helping to create this cataclysmic haze. And then, a final, massive bolt of lightning drops down and hits the beast where it lies, and there, it dies.
What could I do? What could anyone do? In total, there were 19 of us on that ship. You 9 children, and us 9 Sepan, chosen by no means other than where we happened to be that night, and the pilot who brought us here. We Sepan couldn't fight, and what difference would it have made if we could? The Sepan are bureaucrats, meant to keep the planet running, meant to teach, meant to train new guard how to understand and manipulate their powers. We were never meant to be fighters. We would have been ineffective. We would have died like the rest. All we could do was leave. Leave with you, to live, and to one day restore to glory the most beautiful planet in all of the universe.
I close my eyes, and when I reopen them, the fight is ended. Smoke rises from the ground among the dead and the dying. Trees broken, the forests burned. Nothing standing save the few Mogadorians that have lived to tell the tale. The sun rising to the south, and a pale glow growing on the barren land bathed in red. Mounds of bodies, not all of them intact. Not all of them whole. On top of one mound is the man in silver and blue, dead like the rest. There are no discernible marks on his body, but he is dead all the same. My eyes snap open. I can't breathe, and my mouth is dry, parched.
Here, Henri says.
He helps me off the coffee table, guides me into the kitchen, and pulls out a chair for me. Tears are coming to my eyes, though I try to blink them back. Henri brings me a glass of water, and I drink every bit of it without stopping. I give him the glass, and he refills it. I drop my head, still struggling to breathe. I drink the second glass, then look at Henri. Why didn't you ever tell me about a second ship? I ask.
What are you talking about?
There was a second ship, I say.
Where was there a second ship?
On Lorien, the day we left. A second ship that took off after ours.
Impossible,
he says. Why is it impossible?
Because the other ships were destroyed. I saw it with my own eyes. When the Mogadorians landed, they took out our ports first. We traveled in the only ship that survived their offensive. It was a miracle that we made it off.
I saw a second ship. I'm telling you, it wasn't like the others, though. It ran on fuel, a ball of fire following behind it. Henri watches me closely. He is thinking hard, his brows crinkled.
Are you sure, John?
Yes. He leans back in his chair, looks out the window. Bernie Kosar is on the ground, staring up at us both. It made it off Lorien, I say. I watched it the whole way until it disappeared.
That makes no sense,
Henri says.
I don't see how it could be possible. There was nothing left.
There was a second ship. We sit through a long silence. Henri?
Yes.
What was on that ship? He fixes me with a stare.
I don't know,
he says.
I truly don't know.
We sit in the living room, a fire in the hearth, Bernie Kosar in my lap. An occasional pop from the logs breaks the silence. On, I say, and snap my fingers. My right hand illuminates, not as brightly as I've seen it before, but close. In the short amount of time since Henri started coaching me, I've learned to control the glow. I can concentrate it, making it wide, like the light in a house, or narrow and focused like a flashlight. My ability to manipulate it is coming more quickly than I expected. The left hand is still dimmer than the right, but it's catching up. I snap my fingers and say, on, just to show off, but I don't need to do either to control the light or to have it come on. It just happens from within, as effortlessly as twitching a finger or blinking an eye. When do you think the other legacies will develop? I ask. Henri looks up from the paper.
Soon, he says. The next one should start within the month, whatever it is. You just have to keep a close watch. Not all the powers will be obvious like your hands.
How long will it take for them all to come? He shrugs.
Sometimes all is complete within 2 months. Sometimes it takes up to a year. It varies from guard to guard. But however long it takes, your major legacy will be the last to develop.
I close my eyes and lean back against the couch. I think about my major legacy, the one that will allow me to fight. I'm not sure what I want it to be. Lasers? Mind control. The ability to manipulate the weather as I had seen the man in silver and blue do. Or do I want something darker, more sinister, like the ability to kill without touching? I run my hand down Bernie Kosar's back. I look over at Henri. He's wearing a nightcap and a pair of spectacles on the tip of his nose like a storybook rat. Why were we at the airfield that day? I ask.
We were there for an air show. After it was over, we took a tour of some of the ships.
Was that really the only reason? He turns back to me and nods. He swallows hard. And it makes me think that he's keeping something from me. Well, how was it decided that we would leave? I ask. I mean, surely a plan like that would have needed more time than a few minutes' notice, right?
We didn't take off until 3 hours after the invasion started. Do you not remember any of it?
Very little.
We met your grandfather at the statue of Pittacus. He gave you to me and told me to get you to the airfield, that was our only chance. There was an underground compound beneath the airfield. He said there had always been a contingency plan in case something of the sort occurred, but it was never taken seriously because the threat of an attack seemed ludicrous, just like it would be here on Earth. If you were to tell any human now that there is a threat of an attack by aliens, well, they would laugh at you. It was no different on Lorien. I asked him how he knew about the plan, and he didn't answer. Just smiled and said, goodbye. It makes sense that no one would really know about the plan, or only a few would.
I nod. So, just like that, you guys came up with a plan to come to Earth?
Of course not. One of the planet's elders met us at the airfield. He's the one who cast the Lorik charm that branded your ankles and tied you all together and gave you each an amulet. He said, you were special children, blessed children, by which, I assume, he meant you were getting a chance to escape. We originally planned to take the ship up and wait out the invasion. Wait for our people to fight back and win. But that never happened.
He says, trailing off. Then he sighs.
We stayed in orbit for a week. That was how long it took for the Mogadorians to strip Lorien of everything. After it became clear that there would be no going back, we set our course for Earth.
Why didn't he cast a charm so that none of us could be killed? Regardless of numbers.
There's only so much that can be done, John. What you are talking about is invincibility. It's not possible.
I nod. The charm only does so much. If one of the Mogadorians tries killing us out of order, whatever damage it attempts is reversed and done to it instead. If one had tried shooting me in the head, the bullet would have gone through its own head. But not anymore. Now if they catch me, I die. I sit in silence for a moment thinking about it all. The airfield. Lorien's lone remaining elder who cast the charm on us. Loried us. Now dead. The elders were the first inhabitants of Lorien, those beings who made it what it was. There were 10 of them in the beginning, and they contained all legacies within them. So old, so long ago, that they seem more of a myth than anything based in reality. Aside from Loridas, no one knew what had happened to the rest of them, if they were dead. I try to remember what it was like orbiting the planet, waiting to see if we could go back, but I don't remember any of it. I can recall bits and pieces of the journey. The interior of the ship we traveled in was round and open aside from the 2 bathrooms that had doors. There were cots pushed to one side. The other side was devoted to exercise and games to keep us from getting too antsy. I can't remember what the others looked like. I can't remember the games we played. I remember being bored, an entire year being spent inside an airship with 17 others. There was a stuffed animal I slept with at night. And though I'm sure the memory is wrong, I seem to recall the animal playing back. Henri?
Yes.
I keep having images of a man in a silver and blue suit. I saw him at our house, and on the battlefield. He could control the weather. And then I saw him dead. Henri nods.
Every time you travel back, it'll only be to those scenes holding relevance to you.
He was my father, wasn't he?
Yes,
he says.
He wasn't supposed to come around much. But he did anyway. He was around a lot.
I sigh. My father had fought valiantly, killing the beast and many of the soldiers, but in the end, it still wasn't enough. Do we really have a chance to win?
What do you mean?
We were defeated so easily. What hope is there for a different outcome if we're found, even when we have all developed our powers, and when we finally come together and are ready to fight? What hope do we have against things like those?
Hope,
he says.
There is always hope, John. New developments have yet to present themselves. Not all the information is in. No. Don't give up hope just yet. It's the last thing to go. When you have lost hope, you have lost everything. And when you think all is lost, when all is dire and bleak, there is always hope.
Chapter 12. Henri and I go into town on Saturday for the Halloween parade, almost 2 weeks after arriving in Paradise. I think the solitude is getting to us both. Not that we aren't used to solitude. We are. But the solitude in Ohio is different from that of most other places. There is a certain silence to it, a certain loneliness. It's a cold day, the sun peeking intermittently through thick white clouds gliding by overhead. The town is bustling. All the kids are in costume. We have brought a leash for Bernie Kosar, who is wearing a Superman cape draped over his back, a large S on his chest. He seems unimpressed with it. He's not the only dog dressed as a superhero. Henri and I stand on the sidewalk in front of the Hungry Bear, the diner just off the circle in the center of town, to watch the parade. In its front window hangs a clipping of the Gazette article on Mark James. He's pictured standing on the 50-yard line of the football field, wearing his Letterman jacket, his arms crossed, his right foot resting atop a football, a wry, confident grin on his face. Even I have to admit he looks impressive. Henri sees me staring at the paper.
It's your friend, right?
He asks with a smile. Henri now knows the story, from the near fight to the cow manure to the crush I have on his ex-girlfriend. Since finding out all this information, he has only referred to Mark as my friend. My best friend, I correct him. Just then the band starts. It's at the head of the parade, followed by various Halloween-themed floats, one of which is carrying Mark and a few of the football players. Some I recognize from class, some I don't. They throw handfuls of candy to the kids. Then Mark catches sight of me, and he nudges the guy beside him. Kevin, the kid I need in the groin in the cafeteria. Mark points at me and says something. They both laugh.
That's him?
Henri asks. That's him.
Looks like a dick.
I told you. Then come the cheerleaders, walking, all in uniform, hair pulled back, smiling and waving to the crowd. Sarah is walking alongside them, taking pictures. She gets them in action, while they're jumping, doing their cheers. Despite the fact that she's wearing jeans and no makeup, she's far more beautiful than any of them. We've been talking more and more at school, and I can't stop thinking about her. Henri sees me staring at her. Then he turns back to the parade.
That's her, huh?
That's her. She sees me and waves, then points to the camera, meaning she'd come over but wants to take pictures. I smile and nod.
Well, Henri says, I can certainly see the appeal.
We watch the parade. The mayor of Paradise passes by, sitting on the back of a red convertible. He throws more candy to the children. There'll be a lot of hyper kids today, I think. I feel a tap on my shoulder and turn around. Sam Good, what's the word? He shrugs.
Nothing. What's up with you?
Watching the parade. This is my dad, Henri. They shake hands. Henri says,
John has told me a lot about you.
Really?
Sam asks with a crooked grin.
Really?
Henri responds. Then he pauses a minute, and a smile takes shape.
You know, I've been reading. Maybe you've heard it already, but did you know that aliens are the reason we have thunderstorms? They create them in order to enter our planet unnoticed. The storm creates a diversion, and the lightning you see is really coming from the spaceships entering Earth's atmosphere.
Sam smiles and scratches his head.
Get out of here, he says.
Henri shrugs.
That's what I've heard.
All right,
Sam says, more than willing to oblige Henri.
Well, did you know that the dinosaurs really didn't go extinct? Aliens were so fascinated by them that they decided to gather them all up and take them to their own planet.
Henri shakes his head.
I didn't know that, he says. Did you know that the Loch Ness Monster was really an animal from the planet Trafalgar? They brought him here as an experiment to see if he could survive, and he did. But when he was discovered, the aliens had to take him back, which is why he was never spotted again.
I laugh, not at the theory, but at the name Trafalgar. There is no planet named Trafalgar, and I wonder if Henri has made it up on the fly.
Did you know the Egyptian pyramids were built by aliens?
I've heard that,
Henri says, smiling. This is funny to him, because though the pyramids weren't actually built by aliens, they were built using Lorien knowledge and with Lorien help.
Did you know the world is supposed to end on December 21st, 2012?
Sam nods and grins.
Yeah, I've heard that. Earth's supposed expiration date, the end of the Mayan calendar.
Expiration date? I chime in. Like, best if used before date that's printed on milk cartons? Is Earth going to curdle? I laugh at my own joke, But Sam and Henri pay me no attention. Then Sam says,
Did you know crop circles were originally used as a navigational tool for the Agarian alien race? But that was thousands of years ago. Today, they are only created by bored farmers.
I laugh again. I have the urge to ask, what sorts of people create alien conspiracies if it is bored farmers who create crop circles? But I don't.
How about the Centauri?
Asks Henri.
Do you know of them?
Sam shakes his head.
They're a race of aliens living at Earth's core. They are a contentious race, in constant discord with one another, and when they have civil wars, Earth's surface is thrown off kilter. That's when things such as earthquakes and volcanic eruptions occur. The tsunami of 2004? All because the Centauri King's daughter went missing.
Did they find her? I ask. Henri shakes his head, looks at me, then back at Sam, who is still smiling at the game.
They never did. Theorists believe she is able to shift her shape, and that she is living somewhere in South America.
Henri's theory is so good, I think there's no way he made it up that quickly. I stand there and actually ponder it. Even though I've never heard of aliens called the Centauri, even when I know for a fact that nothing lives at Earth's core.
Did you know? Sam pauses.
I think Henri has stumped him, and as soon as that thought pops into my mind, Sam says something so frightening that a wave of terror shoots through me.
Did you know that the Mogadorians are on a quest for universal domination? And that they have already wiped out one planet and are planning to wipe Earth out next? They're here seeking human weakness so that they can exploit us when the war begins.
My mouth drops open, and Henri stares at Sam, dumbfounded. He's holding his breath. His hand tightens around his coffee cup until I'm afraid that if it tightens any further, the cup will crumple. Sam glances at Henri, then at me.
You guys look like you've seen a ghost. Does this mean I win?
Where did you hear that? I ask. Henri looks at me so fiercely that I wish I had remained silent.
From They Walk Among Us.
Henri still can't think of how to respond. He opens his mouth to speak, but nothing comes. Then a petite woman standing behind Sam interrupts.
Sam!
She says. He turns and looks at her.
Where have you been?
Sam shrugs.
I was standing right here.
She sighs, then says to Henri,
Hi, I'm Sam's mother.
Henri, he says and shakes her hand. Pleased to meet you.
She opens her eyes in surprise. Something in Henri's accent has excited her.
Ah, bon, vous parlez français? C'est super. J'ai personne avec qui je peux parler français depuis longtemps.
Henri smiles.
I'm sorry. I don't actually speak French. I know my accent sounds like it, though.
No?
She is disappointed.
Well, hell. Here I thought some dignity had finally come to town.
Sam looks at me and rolls his eyes.
All right, Sam, let's get going,
she says. He shrugs.
You guys gonna go to the park and the hayride?
I look at Henri, then at Sam. Yeah, sure, I say. Are you? He shrugs.
Well, try to come meet us if you can,
I say. He smiles and nods.
Okay, cool.
Time to go, Sam. And you might not be able to go on the hayride. I need your help at home,
his mother says. He starts to say something, but she walks away. Sam follows her.
Very nice woman,
Henri says sarcastically. How did you make all that up? I ask. The crowd begins migrating up Main Street, away from the circle. Henri and I follow it up to the park, where cider and food are being served.
You lie long enough, and you start to get used to it.
I nod. So, what do you think? He takes a deep breath and exhales. The temperature is cold enough so that I can see his breath.
I have no idea. I don't know what to think at this point. He caught me off guard.
He caught us both off guard.
We're going to have to look into the publication he's getting his information from. Find out who is writing it and where it is being written.
He looks over at me expectantly. What?
You're going to have to get a copy, he says.
I will, I say.
But still, it makes no sense. How could somebody know that?
It's being supplied from somewhere.
Do you think it's one of us?
No.
Do you think it's them?
It could be. I've never thought to check the conspiracy theory rags. Perhaps they think we read them and can root us out by leaking information like that. I mean...
He pauses, thinks about it for a minute.
Hell, John, I don't know. We'll have to look into it, though. It's not a coincidence, that's for sure.
We walk in silence, still a little stunned, turning possible explanations over in our minds. Bernie Kosar trots along between us, tongue dangling, his cape falling to one side and dragging on the sidewalk. He's a big hit with the kids, and many of them stop us to pet him. The park is situated on the southern edge of town. At the far border are two adjacent lakes, separated by a narrow strip of land leading into the forest beyond them. The park itself is made up of three baseball fields, a playground, and a large pavilion where volunteers serve cider and slices of pumpkin pie. Three hay wagons are off to the side of the gravel drive, with a large sign reading, "Be scared out of your wits. Halloween haunted hay rides. Start at sundown. $5 per person." The drive segues from gravel to dirt before it reaches the woods, the entrance to which is decorated with cutouts of ghost and goblin caricatures. It appears that the haunted hayride travels through the woods. I look around for Sarah, but don't see her anywhere. I wonder if she'll be going on it. Henri and I enter the pavilion. The cheerleaders are off to the side, some of them doing Halloween-themed face paintings for the kids, the others selling raffle tickets for the drawing to be held at 6 p.m. "Hi, John," I hear behind me. I turn around, and there's Sarah, holding her camera. "How did you like the parade?" I smile at her and slide my hands into my pockets. There's a small white ghost painted on her cheek. "Hey, you," I say. "I liked it. I think I'm getting used to this small-town Ohio charm." "Charm? You mean boringness, right?" I shrug. "I don't know. It isn't bad." "Hey, it's the little guy from school. I remember you," she says, bending down to pet Bernie Kosar. He wags his tail wildly, jumps up and tries to lick her face. Sarah laughs. I look over my shoulder. Henri is 20 feet away, talking to Sarah's mom at one of the picnic tables. I'm curious to know what they're talking about. "I think he likes you. His name is Bernie Kosar."
"Bernie Kosar? That's no name for an adorable dog. Look at this cape. It's like cute overload."
"You know, if you keep that up, I'm going to be jealous of my own dog," I say. She smiles and stands.
"So, are you going to buy a raffle ticket from me or what? It's to rebuild a not-for-profit animal shelter destroyed in a fire last month in Colorado."
"Really?
How does a girl from Paradise, Ohio, learn of an animal shelter in Colorado?" "It's my aunt's. I've convinced all the girls on the cheerleading squad to participate. We're going to take a trip and assist in the construction. We'll be helping the animals and getting out of school in Ohio for a week. It's a win-win situation."
I picture Sarah dressed in a hard hat, wielding a hammer. The thought brings a grin to my face. "So you're saying I'm going to have to cover the kitchen alone for a whole week?" I fake an exasperated sigh and shake my head. "I don't know if I can support such a trip now, even if it is for the animals." She laughs and punches me in the arm.
I take out my wallet and give her $5 for 6 tickets.
These 6 are good luck, she says.
They are?
Of course. You bought them for me, silly.
Just then, over Sarah's shoulder, I see Mark and the rest of the guys from the float walk into the pavilion.
Are you going on the haunted hayride tonight? Sarah asks.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
You should. It's fun. Everybody does it. And it actually gets pretty scary.
Mark sees Sarah and me talking and scrunches his face into a scowl. He comes walking our way. Same outfit as always. Letterman jacket, blue jeans, hair full of gel.
So you're going? I ask Sarah.
Before she can respond, Mark interrupts.
How do you like the parade, Johnny? He asks.
Sarah quickly turns around and glares at him.
I liked it a lot, I reply.
You going on the haunted hayride tonight, or are you going to be too scared?
I smile at him. As a matter of fact, I am going.
You gonna have a freak out like in school and run out of the woods crying like a baby?
Don't be an ass, Mark,
Sarah says. He looks at me, seething. With the crowd around, there is nothing he can do without causing a scene, and I don't think he would do anything anyway.
All in due time, Mark says.
You think?
Yours is coming, he says.
That might be true, I say, but it won't be coming from you.
Stop it!
Sarah yells. She works her way in between us, pushing us away from each other. People are watching. She glances around as though embarrassed by the attention, then scowls at Mark first, then at me.
Fine then. You guys fight if that's what you want to do. Good luck with it, Sarah says, and turns and walks away.
I watch her go. Mark doesn't.
Sarah,
I call, but she keeps walking and disappears past the pavilion.
Soon,
Mark says. I look back to him. I doubt it. He retreats to his group of friends. Henri walks up to me.
I don't suppose he was inquiring about yesterday's math homework.
Not quite, I say.
I wouldn't worry about him, Henri says. He looks to be all talk.
I'm not, I say, and then glance at the spot where Sarah disappeared. Should I go after her? I ask, and look at him, pleading to the part of him that was once married and in love. That part that still misses his wife every day, and not the part of him that wants to keep me safe and hidden. He nods his head.
Yeah,
he says with a sigh.
As much as I hate to admit it, you should probably go after her.
Chapter 13. Kids running, screaming, on slides and jungle gyms. Every kid with a bag of candy in his or her hand, with a mouth stuffed full of sweets. Kids dressed as cartoon characters, monsters, ghouls, and ghosts. Every resident of paradise must be at the park right now. And in the midst of all the madness, I see Sarah, sitting alone, gently pushing herself on the swing. I weave my way through the screams and shrieks. When Sarah sees me, she smiles. Those big blue eyes of hers like a beacon.
Need a push? I ask.
She nods to the swing that has just opened beside her, and I sit.
Doing okay? I ask.
Yeah, I'm fine. He just wears me down. He always has to act so tough, and he's downright mean when he's around friends.
She twists herself on the swing until the rope becomes taut. Then she lifts her feet, and it spins her around, slowly at first, then gaining speed. She laughs the whole time, her blonde hair a trail behind her. I do the same thing. When the swing finally stops, the world keeps spinning.
Where is Bernie Kosar?
I left him with Henri, I say.
Your dad?
Yes, my dad. I am constantly doing that, calling Henri by his name when I should be saying, Dad. The temperature is quickly dropping. and my hands are white-knuckled on the rope chain, becoming cold. We watch the kids run amok around us. Sarah looks at me, and her eyes seem bluer than ever in the coming dusk. Our gaze stays locked, each of us just staring at the other. No words being said, but much passing between us. The children seem to fade into the background. Then she smiles shyly and looks away. "So, what are you going to do?" I ask.
"About what?"
"Mark."
She shrugs.
"What can I do? I've already broken up with him. I keep telling him I have no interest in getting back together."
I nod. I'm not sure how to respond to that.
"But anyway, I should probably try to sell the rest of these tickets, only an hour before the raffle."
"Do you want any help?"
"No, that's okay. You should go have fun. Bernie Kosar is probably missing you right now, but you should definitely stick around for the hayride. Maybe we can go on it together."
"I will," I say. A happiness blooms inside of me, but I try to keep it hidden.
"I'll see you in a little while, then."
"Good luck with the tickets." She reaches over and grabs my hand and holds it for a good 3 seconds. Then she lets go, jumps off the swing, and hurries away. I sit there, gently swinging, enjoying the brisk wind that I haven't felt in a very long time because we spent the last winter in Florida and the one before that in South Texas. When I head back to the pavilion, Henri is sitting at a picnic table, eating a slice of pie with Bernie Kosar lying at his feet.
"How did it go?"
"Good," I say with a smile. From somewhere, an orange and blue firework shoots up and explodes in the sky. It makes me think of Lorien and of the fireworks I saw on the day of the invasion.
"Have you thought any more about the second ship I saw?"
Henri looks around to make sure there's nobody within earshot. We have the picnic table to ourselves, positioned in the far corner, away from the crowd.
"A little. I still have no idea what it means, though."
"Do you think it could have traveled here?"
"No, it wouldn't be possible. If it ran on fuel, like you say, it wouldn't have been able to travel far without refueling."
I sit for a moment. "I wish it could have."
"Could have what?"
"Traveled here, with us."
"It's a nice thought," says Henri.
An hour or so passes, and I see all the football players, Mark in front, walk across the grass. They are dressed up as mummies, zombies, ghosts, 25 of them in total. They sit in the bleachers of the nearest baseball field, and the cheerleaders who are drawing on the children begin applying makeup to complete the costumes of Mark and his friends. It's only then that I realize the football players will be the ones doing the scaring on the haunted hayride, the ones waiting for us in the woods. "See that?" I ask Henri. Henri looks at them all and nods, then picks up his coffee and takes a long drink.
"Think you should still go on the ride?"
he asks. "No," I say. "But I'm going to anyway."
"I figured you would."
Mark is dressed as a zombie of sorts, wearing dark tattered clothes, with black and gray makeup on his face, splotches of red in random places to simulate blood. When his costume is complete, Sarah walks up to him and says something. His voice becomes raised, but I can't hear what he's saying. His movements are animated, and he talks so fast that I can tell he's stumbling over his words. Sarah crosses her arms and shakes her head at him. His body tenses. I move to stand, but Henri grabs my arm.
"Don't,"
he says.
"He's only pushing her further away."
I look at them and wish with everything that I could hear what is being said, but there are too many screaming kids around to focus in. When the yelling stops, they both stand looking at each other. A hurtful scowl on Mark's face, an incredulous grin on Sarah's. Then she shakes her head and walks away. I look at Henri. What should I do now?
Not a thing, he says. Not a thing.
Mark walks back to his friends, head hung, scowling. A few of them look in my direction. Smirks appear. Then they start walking towards the forest. A slow, methodical march. 25 guys in costume, receding in the distance. To kill time, I walk back to the center of town with Henri, and we eat dinner at the Hungry Bear. When we walk back, the sun has set, and the first trailer piled with hay and pulled by a green tractor takes off for the woods. The crowd is thinned considerably, and those left are mostly high schoolers and free-spirited adults who total 100 or so people. I look for Sarah among them, but I don't see her. The next trailer leaves in 10 minutes. According to the pamphlet, the whole ride is half an hour long, the tractor going through the woods slowly, the anticipation building. And then it stops, and the riders are to get off and follow a different trail on foot, at which point the scares begin. Henri and I stand beneath the pavilion, and I again scan the long line of people waiting their turn. I still don't see her. Just then, my phone vibrates in my pocket. I can't remember the last time my phone rang when it wasn't Henri calling. The caller ID reads, Sarah Hart. Excitement rushes through me. She must have entered my number into her phone the same day she entered hers into mine. Hello? I say. John? Yeah? Hey, it's Sarah. Are you still at the park? She says. She sounds as though her calling me is normal, that I shouldn't think twice about her already having my number, despite my never having given it to her. Yes? Great. I'm going to be back there in about 5 minutes. Have the rides started? Yeah, a couple minutes ago. You haven't gone yet, have you? No. Oh, good. Wait, so we can ride together. Yeah, definitely, I say. The second one is about to leave now. Perfect. I'll be there in time for the third. See you then. I hang up, a huge smile on my face.
Be careful out there,
Henri says. I will. Then I pause and try to bring lightness to my voice. You don't have to stick around. I'm sure I can get a ride home.
I'm willing to stay and live in this town, John, even when it's probably smarter for us to leave, given the events that have already happened. But you're going to have to meet me halfway on things, and this is one of them. I don't like the looks those guys gave you earlier one bit.
I nod. I'll be fine, I say.
I'm sure you will. But just in case, I'm going to be right here waiting.
I sigh. Fine. Sarah pulls up 5 minutes later with a pretty friend who I've seen before but have never been introduced to. She has changed into jeans, a wool sweater, and a black jacket. She has wiped away the painted ghost that was on her right cheek, and her hair is down, falling past her shoulders. Hey, you, she says. Hi. She wraps her arms around me in a tentative hug. I can smell the perfume wafting up from her neck. Then she pulls away. Hi, John's dad, she says to Henri. This is my friend Emily.
Pleased to meet you both, Henri says. So you guys are off into the unknown terror.
You bet, Sarah says. Will this one be okay out there? I don't want him getting too scared on me, Sarah says to Henri, motioning to me with a smile. Henri grins, and I can tell he already likes Sarah.
You better stay close, just in case.
She looks over her shoulder. The third trailer is a quarter full. I'll keep him safe, she says. We better get going.
Have a great time, Henri says.
Sarah surprises me by taking my hand, and the three of us rush off towards the hay wagon 100 yards away from the pavilion. There's a line about 30 people long. We get to the back of it and start talking, though I'm feeling a little shy and mostly just listen to the two girls talk. As we're waiting, I see Sam hovering off to the side, as though contemplating whether or not to approach us. Sam! I yell with more enthusiasm than I intended. He stumbles over. You coming on the ride with us? He shrugs.
Do you mind?
Come on, Sarah says, and motions him in. He stands next to Emily, who smiles at him. He immediately starts blushing, and I'm ecstatic he's along for the ride. Suddenly, a kid holding a walkie-talkie comes over. I recognize him from the football team. Hi, Tommy, Sarah says to him.
Hey, he says. There are 4 spots left on this wagon. You guys want them?
Really?
Yeah.
We skip the line and jump up onto the trailer, where the 4 of us sit on a bale of hay together. I find it odd that Tommy doesn't ask us for tickets. I'm curious as to why he let us skip the line altogether. Some of the people waiting look at us with disgust. I can't say that I blame them.
Enjoy the ride, Tommy says with a grin.
The kind I've seen people wear when told something bad has happened to someone they despise. That was weird, I say. Sarah shrugs. He probably has a crush on Emily. Oh, God, I hope not, Emily says, and then fake gags. I watch Tommy from the bale of hay. The trailer is only half full, which is another thing that strikes me as strange, since there are so many people waiting. The tractor pulls away, bumps along the pathway, and drives through the entrance of the forest, where ghastly sounds come through hidden speakers. The forest is thick, and no light penetrates other than what shines from the front of the tractor. Once that is off, I think, there will be nothing but darkness. Sarah takes hold of my hand again. She's cold to the touch, but a sense of warmth floods through me. She leans over to me and whispers, I'm a little scared. Figures of ghosts hang just over us from the low branches, and off the drive, grimacing zombies lean against various trees. The tractor stops and kills its headlight. Then come intermittent strobes that flash for 10 seconds. There is nothing scary about them, and only when they stop do I understand their effect. Our eyes take a few seconds to adjust, and we can't see a thing. Then a scream shoots through the night, and Sarah tenses against me as figures sweep around us. I squint to focus, and I see that Emily has moved next to Sam, and that he is smiling widely. I'm actually a little scared myself. I put my arm carefully around Sarah. A hand grazes our backs, and Sarah grips tightly to my leg. Some of the others scream. With a jolt, the tractor turns back on and continues forward, nothing but the outlines of the trees in its light. We drive for another 3 or 4 minutes. The anticipation builds, the foreboding fear of having to walk the distance we just drove. Then the tractor pulls into a circular clearing and stops.
Everybody off!
The driver yells. When the last person is off, the tractor pulls away. Its light recedes in the distance, then disappears, leaving nothing but the night, and not a single sound other than what we make.
Shit!
Somebody says, and all of us laugh. In total, there are 11 of us. A path of lights turns on, showing us the way, then turns off. I close my eyes to focus on the feel of Sarah's fingers interlocked with mine.
I have no idea why I do this every year, Emily says nervously, her arms wrapped around herself.
The other people have started down the trail, and we follow. The pathway of lights occasionally flickers on to keep us on our way. The others are far enough ahead that we can't see them. I can barely see the ground at my feet. 3 or 4 screams suddenly ring out in front of us.
Oh no, Sarah says, and squeezes my hand. Sounds like trouble ahead.
Just then, something heavy falls on us. Both girls scream, and so does Sam. I trip and hit the ground, scraping my knee. Tangled in whatever the hell the thing is, then I realize it's a net.
What the hell? Sam asks.
I tear straight through the twisted rope. But the second I'm free, I get shoved hard from behind. Someone grabs me and drags me away from the girls and Sam. I break free and stand, but I'm immediately hit from behind again.
This isn't part of the ride.
Let go of me!
One of the girls yells. A guy laughs in response. I can't see a thing. The girls' voices are moving away from me.
John!
Sarah calls.
Where are you, John?
Shouts Sam. I stand to go after them, but I'm hit again. No, that's not right. I am tackled. The wind is knocked out of me when I'm plowed to the ground. I rush up and try to catch my breath, my hand against a tree for support. I pick dirt and leaves from my mouth. I stand there a few seconds and don't hear a single sound other than my own labored breathing. Just when I think I've been left alone, somebody shoulders into me and sends me flying into a nearby tree. My head slams against the trunk, and I briefly see stars. I'm surprised by the person's strength. I reach up and touch my forehead and feel blood on my fingertips. I look around again, but can't see anything other than the silhouetted trees. I hear a scream from one of the girls, followed by the sounds of struggle. I grit my teeth. I am shaking. Are there people mixed in with the wall of trees around me? I can't tell. But I feel a set of eyes on me. Somewhere.
Get off of me!
Sarah yells. She's being pulled away. I can tell that much. Okay, I say to the darkness, to the trees. Anger surges through me. You want to play games? I say loudly this time. Somebody laughs nearby. I take a step towards the sound. I get shoved from behind, but I catch my balance before I fall. I throw a blind punch, and the back of my hand scrapes against the bark of a tree. There is nothing left to do. What point is there in having legacies if they are never used when needed? Even if it means Henri and I load the truck tonight and drive off to yet another town, at least I will have done what I needed to do. You want to play games? I yell again. I can play games too! A trickle of blood runs down the side of my face. Okay, I think. Let's do this. They can do all they want to me, but they will not harm a single hair on Sarah's head. Or Sam's. Or Emily's. I take a deep breath, and adrenaline races through me. A malicious smile takes shape, and my body feels as though it has grown bigger. Stronger. My hands come on and glow brilliantly, with bright light that sweeps through the night. The world suddenly ablaze. I look up. I flash my hands across the trees and sprint off into the night. Chapter 14. Kevin steps from the trees, dressed as a mummy. He's the one who tackled me. The lights stun him, and he seems dumbfounded, trying to figure out where they're coming from. He's wearing night vision goggles. So that is how they are able to see us, I think. Where did they get them? He charges me, and at the last second, I step out of the way and trip him.
Let go of me,
I hear from down the trail. I look up and sweep my lights across the trees, but nothing moves. I can't tell if the voice is Emily's or Sarah's. A guy's laughter follows. Kevin tries to stand, but I kick him in the side before he gets to his feet. He falls back to the ground with an oomph. I rip the goggles from his face and throw them as far as I can, and know they will land at least a mile away. Maybe two. Or three, because I'm so angry that my strength is out of control. Then I race off through the woods before Kevin can even sit up. The trail winds left, then right. My hands glow only when I need to see. I sense that I'm close. Then I see Sam up ahead, standing with a zombie's arms around him. Three others are close by. The zombie lets go of him.
Chill out! We're just kidding around. If you don't resist, you won't get hurt, he says to Sam. Sit down or something!
I snap my hands on and flash the lights in their eyes to blind them. The closest person steps towards me, and I swing and hit him in the side of the face. And he falls motionless to the ground. His goggles sail into the overgrown brambles and disappear. The second person tries to bear hug me, but I break his grip and lift him off the ground.
What the hell?
He says, confused. I throw him, and he hits the side of a tree 20 feet away. The third guy sees this and runs away. That just leaves the fourth, the one who is holding Sam. He lifts his hands in front of him, as though I'm aiming a gun at his chest.
It wasn't my idea,
he says. What does he have planned?
Nothing, man. We just wanted to play a joke on you guys, scare you a little.
Where are they?
They let Emily go. Sarah is up ahead.
Give me your goggles, I say.
No way, man. We're borrowing them from the police. I'll get in trouble.
I step towards him.
Fine,
he says. He takes them off and hands them to me. I throw them even harder than I did the previous pair. I hope they land in the next town. Let them explain that one to the police. I grab Sam's shirt with my right hand. I can't see a thing without turning on my light. Only then do I realize I should have kept the two pairs of goggles for us to wear, but I didn't. So I take a deep breath and let my left hand glow and begin guiding us up the path. If Sam finds it suspicious, he doesn't let on. I stop to listen. Nothing. We continue on, weaving through the trees. I turn the light off.
Sarah!
I yell. I stop to listen, and hear nothing but the wind blowing through the branches and Sam's heavy breathing. How many people are with Mark? I ask.
5 or so.
Do you know which way they went?
I didn't see.
We push on, and I have no idea in which direction we are headed. From far off, I hear the groan of the tractor motor. The fourth ride is starting. I feel frantic inside and want to sprint, but I know that Sam can't keep up. He's breathing heavily already, and even I'm sweating, despite the temperature being only 45 degrees. Or maybe I'm mistaking blood for sweat. I can't tell. As we pass a thick tree with a knotted trunk, I get tackled from behind. Sam yells as a fist hits me in the back of the head, and I'm momentarily stunned. But then I pivot and grab the guy by the throat and shine the light in his face. He tries to peel my fingers away, but it's useless. What is Mark planning?
Nothing,
he says.
Wrong answer.
I thrust him into the nearest tree 5 feet away, then I pick him up and lift him a foot off the ground with my hand again around his throat. His legs kick wildly, hitting me, but I tighten my muscles so that the kicks do no damage. What is he planning to do? I lower him until his feet touch solid ground, loosening my grip to allow him to speak. I sense Sam watching, drinking all of this in, but there is nothing I can do about it.
We just wanted to scare you guys, he gasps.
I swear I will break you in half if you don't tell me the truth.
He thinks that the others are dragging you two to Shepherd Falls. That's where he took Sarah. He wanted her to see him beat the crap out of you, and then he was going to let you go.
Lead me, I say. He shuffles forward, and I turn my light off. Sam takes hold of my shirt and follows behind us. When we walk through a small clearing lit by the moonlight overhead, I can see that he's looking at my hands. They're gloves, I say. Kevin Miller was wearing them, some sort of Halloween prop. He nods, but I can tell he's freaked out. We walk for nearly a minute until we hear the sound of running water just ahead of us. Give me your goggles, I say to the guy leading us. He hesitates, and I twist his arm. He writhes in pain and quickly rips them from his face.
Take them,
he yells. When I put them on, the world turns to a shade of green. I push him hard and he falls to the ground. Come on, I say to Sam, and we walk ahead, leaving the guy behind. Up ahead, I see the group. I count 8 guys, plus Sarah. I can see them now. Do you want to wait here or come with me? It might get ugly.
I want to come,
Sam says. I can tell he's scared, though I'm not sure if it's because of what he's seen me do or the football players ahead of us. I walk the rest of the way as silently as I can.
Sam tiptoeing behind me. When we are just a few feet away, a twig snaps beneath Sam's